Hi, this is Mark Waid, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 332 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Todd with Joe. How are we doing today, Joe?
I'm doing good. I'm ready to talk about comic books, TV shows, movies, sales, stuff, things.
Look at you all fired up. Calm down. Calm down.
I'm trying to even us out.
You're trying to even, because I'm wound for sound?
Right.
Oh, well, I shouldn't have had that promo powder before we started the show. you're doing pretty good? What? What'd you say? I lost you again.
What do we got on the show this week?
There you go. That's what I like to hear. In news, we have a cartoon I've never heard of gets its own comic.
Shameful. That'll be a deep dive.
That'll be a deep dive. Two books replace themselves, I guess. And a book gets new number ones. Variant covers? No. Something completely different that has blown my mind in the way to do number ones. We also have comic shows, digital freebies and sales. What we read last week, we only have two books this week, Darth Maul and Batman. What we're looking forward to this week, Joe and Todd Have Issues, which is the classic Justice League number one, which had its 30th anniversary over the weekend.
Right.
Big time stuff. And at the end, spoilerly filled talk of both Flash and Legends, because you didn't see Riverdale or anything like that, right?
Right. I do want to apologize to the listeners. We did have an outcry, like four people.
Oh, I love when they outcry.
Say that they did want us to add Riverdale to the list of things. Powerless just came out this week. You know, essentially new number ones, quote unquote, for TV shows. I have them ready to go. I just haven't found the time to watch them.
Oh, boy.
But we'll see. Maybe we'll just kind of do like, we'll figure out something. Riverdale definitely will get talked about at some point.
That's right. So I just can't wait to hear what you think of the updated version of Sugar Sugar.
Uh-oh. That's what I want.
Yeah.
There's music in this? I'm out.
What? Don't you remember the Archies had Sugar Sugar?
I do.
Ron Dante wrote that. Sugar Sugar, da-da-da-da, ah, honey, honey. It's something like that, but not as good.
You know, it's been a long time since either one of us has sang on the show.
Well, if you give it away all the time, people are just like, pfft. But now they're like, oh, Todd, sing it.
Now I've got to download it. Get that click farm back in action.
That's right. All the Chinese people are like, yes, Todd's singing.
I'm glad you did not do an offensive voice.
I stopped myself.
All right, fair enough. So let's talk about the number one that you had mentioned, the new number one that is going to be coming out sometime later this year from Dave Sim with Cerebus. This October, he's going to be doing a new number one issue every month.
Which we always joked about, I mean, at the store and stuff, that somebody's going to come along and just do a new number one. Because, you know, it's the whole Marvel revamps the thing, or DC's got their new number ones every so often. I was like, we were like, oh, well, they should have 12 issues in a year, and then each year would be a volume. And then we were like, no, it's just going to be January's, Spider-Man number one. February, Spider-Man number one. March, Spider-Man number one. And there's Dave Sim. He's the crazy guy who's actually going to do it.
Well, I bring it up only because, of course, you are a Cerebus fan.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a reworking of his current Cerebus and Hell series with new work created in Photoshop, because I guess due to medical issues, he can't draw anymore.
Which I had no idea.
Yeah,
about
neither
that.
Did I.
I thought all, because I got the Cerebus and Hell issue 0 or whatever it was. It was either 0 or 1 because it threw me off when I got it. And it was all it was just like Cerebus. I thought he was just drawing Cerebus, and then everything was like Dante's Inferno in the background. He was just swiping, you know what I mean? Like putting Cerebus in. So I thought he was like drawing new poses of Cerebus, putting him in Dante's Inferno. But I guess what he was doing was he was just taking old photo, like old art of Cerebus and photoshopping him in, which is what he's going to do with this. And I'm actually upset because, like, man, could he, I loved his artwork back in the day.
It is sad when you get to see the people that you grew up on no longer be able to create the things that you love them for.
That's true. Father Time wins every time.
With the story last week about Bernie Wrightson being no longer able to create. Now Dave Sim, of course. You know, we are, you know, a little bit older than a lot of the creators that we are fans of, for the most part. So it's going to be in our lifetime that we're going to start seeing this. Like, this is something that has dawned on me quite a bit lately, maybe like within the last year or so, that there are actors and actresses. You know, everyone talks about, 2016 was this year of blah, 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 blah.
No, don't get me started.
Right. But just, you know, last year on the comic side of things, you know, big name guys like Darwin Cook and Steve Dillon passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And these are not guys who were like in their 80s or 90s. These are guys who, you know, were relatively young and like in their late 40s, early 50s. And yeah, you know, it's just, I wanted to bring it up because it was a new number one. I'm like, oh, new number one, Todd likes Cerebus, and then I read the article, and I'm like, oh, boy, let's kick things off with a bummer.
Right. But it's what you say, and I look at it, I'm like, Stan Lee is 94, man. 94. And I'm always like, you know, it catches up to you. It catches up to you. And I think the same thing. And I'll never forget, I had a conversation with Josh when Neil Adams was at the Clark Summit show here. And Josh was like, oh, I'm going to get a piece of artwork off him, or I'm going to get a sketch off him. And I'm like, he's like, what about you? And I'm like, oh, he's a bit expensive. I'll get it later. And he's like, later? He's like, Neil Adams is like in his like upper 60s, like early 70s. And I'm like, nah, he can't be that old. And he's like, he was drawn in the 70s, Todd. It was like, and your brain goes, I'm only 40, that he can't be that much. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can't be that much older. But when you think about it, he is. And I'm like, wow. Woo. You're right. Some of those like old timey creators, they've been around a while. And it just, yeah, it makes me sad to think about it too occasionally.
I may have mentioned this on the show, but it's been quite some time. The moment when mortality for creative types that I like hit me was when I was 17 years old. And I was watching ECW TV, and Mick Foley, Cactus Jack at the time, did a promo talking about how he was going to win the world title and everything else like this, and how he was on the eve of his 31st birthday. And it was at that point, I was doing the math in my head. I'm like, okay, well, he's older than me, but this is a guy who I had literally seen wrestling on TV for the better part of the last 8 years, and he's only 31? Like, I thought at that time, he was in his mid-40s.
Right.
And I'm just like, oh my God. I'm like, and at that point, I'm like, I wonder how old these other wrestlers are, you know? And then I start, you know, in the 1995 way that I could, start looking that information up and...
On microfiche.
Right, on microfilm of old Pro Wrestling Illustrateds at my local library. And I was just like, oh my goodness. But, you know, we've had many wrestlers pass, and I don't know which one's going to be the saddest for me, but I'm sure a lot of them will be very sad, and I don't know, man. Life is fleeting. That's all I got to say.
That's right. As long as we don't lose any more doctors this year.
Like ER or something? Or Dr. Marcus Welby?
Yeah, Clooney. I'm afraid we're going to lose. We're going to lose Clooney. I'm worried.
Nah, he's right where he is. He's on his yacht somewhere in the French Riviera. He's fine.
Good for him.
Right. So, one thing that we won't be fleeting or missing any of is stealth relaunches from Marvel.
What?
Just a few episodes ago, we talked about Marvel releasing a book that is going to explain to everyone the correct reading order for all of their relaunches that they've done over the last several years. Well, coming up this May, two books are getting stealth relaunched. One with a new creative team, another one with the same exact creative team. There is a current Rocket Raccoon book going on, which is its fifth book in since the Guardians of the Galaxy movie came out. This is his fifth series that he's had that has had a new number one.
Kids have short attention spans.
Right. And it's going to be relaunched with a new number one by Al Ewing, just entitled Rocket, number one.
I wonder if they're going to just have the next one just going to be Raccoon.
Right. Or and then it's just going to be eventually R, double R. Oh, no!
Oh, no, that's a whole... Somebody has that TM'd.
I hope that... Patent pending. Yeah, me. That'll be the way that I make my millions off that bum.
Bum?
You heard me.
He's not a bum. He's a national treasure.
The only national treasure I am aware of is the Nicolas Cage films.
Oh, you're supposed to say if he's such a treasure, well, let's bury him.
Wasn't there a movie that he was in where he was buried?
Yes, he was. It was called Buried, I think.
I think it was called Let's Murder Ryan Reynolds. I said that as a joke in parody.
A Joe Sposto story.
Oh my goodness. So the other one is the current ongoing Power Man and Iron Fist book is keeping the same creative team of David Walker and Sanford Green, and it is just being changed to Luke Cage. I don't know what's going on with Iron Fist. No, he's getting his own solo book separately, coming out the month before, but this is them just kind of taking this book that's been around for a year or so, giving it a new number one with the same creative team, and I'm sure once that Defenders book comes out that puts everything together, this book will probably get another new number one around that time.
All right, well, isn't Iron Fist coming around on Netflix at that time?
Right, but no, he has his own book. Like, these are books that are coming out in May. I think the Iron Fist book comes out in April, which is when the Netflix TV show comes out.
I think it comes out in March.
Okay.
March 17, which is close to April.
And I didn't watch the trailer that came out the other day.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'm just learning for the first time that the guy who is playing Iron Fist in the Netflix series...
Right.
...was a recurring character on Community.
Oh, so you won't be able to handle it.
I don't know if I'll be able to separate the two. He played kind of like a hippy-dippy guitar playing in the quad sort of guy named Vaughn.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the first scene in the show where he's shirtless, I'll be like, oh, that's Vaughn. Uh-oh, we're in Community territory now.
Is that why whenever you watch Legends of Tomorrow, you think of like the wool thing or whatever it is?
The what thing?
The wool.
Though that's right, because now we're getting to the point almost where I'm so deep into Legends of Tomorrow that I don't look at Dr. Stein as Eugene Grimby, the head of the Wool Council, anymore.
That's right. What if he gets a pet sheep?
Well, there was a sheep that was on the council.
Right, I know, I've seen the clip because you mentioned it so much I had to go look it up. I was like, I gotta go see what he's talking about. And there's this, like, sheep puppet that's, yeah, like, fantastic.
A puppet? That was a real sheep.
Oh, I'm sorry. Kayfabe, kayfabe.
Come on. Let's not expose the business of situation comedies.
Oh, no.
But no, you know, like, I don't have that sort of attachment. Like, I think we're far enough removed from a thing like, let's say, Superman Returns that Brandon Routh was in.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't look at him in Legend of Tomorrow and be like, oh, that's Superman.
Sure, because he's better as the Atom.
Right, he's better as the Atom. Once you get enough in your ledger of the other thing,
mm-hmm,
then it can make me forget about the other thing.
So as soon as he fires up that Iron Fist, you'll be fine.
As long as he doesn't play guitar in the show, I'm okay.
Oh, I hope he plays a guitar. I really do. At
I
some
hope the
point,
the entire cast of Community, including Chevy Chase, do cameos in it just because.
Oh my goodness, Chevy Chase would be fantastic.
He plays. I don't know. You remember when There was that time at it wasn't just Marvel, but it was like everyone was kind of doing it, where when Brubaker and Fraction were on Iron Fist and were like, oh, Danny Rand's not the only Iron Fist. Like, they've kind of sort of talked about that before, but now we're going to show you all these other Iron Fists, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Chevy Chase is like some sort of like old broken down like former master who spins these yarns of like these greater stories and greater adventures that he was on, where he was really just like a lazy bum.
Okay. I don't remember that.
There's an episode of Netflix. Go ahead. There's an episode of the Netflix show. Somebody go film that and give me $1 million.
Okay, that's pitching shows again, all right?
Is that how Hollywood works?
It should. If it was, we'd be billionaires.
I just speak my dumb ideas into a microphone and wait for a check to arrive.
Let me go check the mailbox. I'll be right back.
I have a slot in my door. I don't even have a mailbox.
Oh, my goodness.
So the last thing that we're going to be discussing here is an upcoming IDW crossover. Now, IDW has a bunch of the Hasbro properties. You know, they've been doing G.I. Joe and Transformers for quite some time. They put out ROM and Action Man and Mask and Micronauts and all these other things, and they're doing Revolutionaries, which is kind of crossing all of these properties over into one shared universe, or at least one shared comic book universe, all kind of on the heels of, like, wasn't it like 2 years ago where they said they were going to start crossing the movie franchises over?
I think so.
So, they have a crossover coming up this spring called The Evil That Lies Within. And people are speculating that this is going to be the introduction of the Inhumanoids into this universe.
Okay.
And Todd at the beginning of the show said, I have no idea what the Inhumanoids are.
No, I don't.
So, as a child, there was a different block of shows that aired on Sunday morning in syndication. It was very short-lived. I think it only maybe lasted one season. And Inhumanoids was one of those shows. I think Visionaries might have been another one. Do you remember Visionaries?
Nope. I'm more of a Silverhawks guy.
Okay. Now, Silverhawks, not Hasbro, that was in, like, regular syndication, like, alongside your Thundercats and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just look up this information about Inhumanoids real quickly. So, Inhumanoids were, like, these... The toys were really super cool. Because they were like these giant, like almost like a foot tall, huge plastic monsters that had all these like interchangeable parts. And there was ones where like you can open up the chest and put other characters inside them. All this crazy stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were these monsters that lived underground, and they took on the Earth Core. Get it? The Earth Core, because the monsters lived underground, and the people that fought them were called the Earth Core. Anyway.
I get it now.
Right, there you go.
Took me a second. Go on.
So, I'm just trying to see what else was on with it. So, Visionaries was another thing that... It was one of those weird cartoons that took place in a medieval time, but also had, like, futuristic elements.
Okay.
Where every person either... Like, their entire torso, or, like, their head and torso, or just their chest would have a hologram on it. Todd, do you remember when everything had holograms on them?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Holograms are the best. Doesn't certain money have holograms on it now? I'm so confused.
Right. That's if you're in another country. Like, it has a hologram of a goose or a duck or something on it. Now, it was also included in this was, like, Gem and the Holograms... another thing called Robotics that I'm not even aware of what it is. It looks like some sort of like weird dinosaur robots.
I remember Robotics.
Okay. Now the other thing that they had that was part of this group was Bigfoot and the Muscle Machines.
Like the monster or the truck?
No, like the Bigfoot monster truck.
Oh, put those two words together.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. since you know, Bigfoot is on the outs with the Monster Jam.
Right. I don't understand
why. Todd, we can go deep on the politics. You think there's politics in parallels in the world of professional wrestling with comic book conventions. Forget about it when it comes to monster trucks.
Bigfoot was the Hulk Hogan of of monster trucks. How could you get rid of him? It'd be like banning Hulk Hogan.
Was the Hulk Hogan.
Okay.
Now he's running, now he's doing, like, pun intended, mud shows in, like, D-towns, which is, like, Bigfoot and a bunch of jobber trucks.
Oh, my God.
Right. But anyway, so just, there was, like, a bunch of trucks that don't exist anymore on Bigfoot and the Muscle Machines, Black Gold, Orange Blossom Special, and Warlord, and they were all trying to stop this elderly billionaire named Adrian Ravenscroft from getting the map to the Fountain of Youth.
Well, that makes total sense.
Right. So where the Inhumanoids parallel comes in is, you know how like when they would debut a show, there would be like the first five episodes would be a five-parter?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first five-episode five-parters for Inhumanoids is called The Evil That Lies Within, which is the same title of this upcoming crossover.
Makes sense.
Right. So I only put this on there because I was a big fan of the Inhumanoids toys because they were really awesome. When you get a chance, mm-hmm. go check them out and see how cool they were. But I also hope that means Bigfoot and the Muscle Machines will get a comic book as well and cross over into this universe as well.
Well, it all depends is if Marvel has a character that nobody cares about and pushes them like called Bigfoot, kind of like the way they do Inhumans, because I think that's what the Inhumanoids are trying
to get. Is that what you think it is?
They're trying to get that name. They're trying to get that Inhuman cachet, and they're like, hey, IDW has the Inhumanoids, you know?
So you think I think they're not doing it because it's just another Hasbro property to add to their already expanding crossover universe, but it's more so to cause confusion in the marketplace.
That's right, brand confusion. When the Inhuman movie TV show hits the movie theater, which is that's confusing as heck, mm-hmm. Then there'll be an Inhumanoid comic out there, and like somebody's grandma will be like, Billy said he wanted the Inhumanoids. Here you go. And can I get a copy of Nazi Smasher too?
Careful now with that last one there, with your elderly shaming.
Okay.
But, so they're taking the Asylum Films approach to this.
That's what I think so.
Oh, Alan Quartermain in The Search for the Crystal Skull. That's kind of like that Indiana Jones movie that's in theaters. I didn't know it was out on DVD already. I'll get this for the kids and horribly disappoint them.
What? Kids love the Alan Quartermain.
Oh my goodness.
What was your favorite archaeologist? Why the Alan Quartermain?
And his dad, James Bond.
That's right. I'll watch that movie.
I'll have to find it just for my own reference, and I hate listening to myself on podcasts, but there was an episode of Dadstractions. Remember Dadstractions?
I do. I still want to bring that back.
Unofficial part of the network. I should just randomly put on the website an episode. You know what? When I go and find the episode of Dadstractions, where Brian and I talked about this,
mm-hmm.
where we go through all of the Asylum hits, to like their mockbusters that they do, and like what the real movie is that they're mockbusting.
Mm-hmm.
Like Transmorphers.
Oh, what movie could that be? Is that the one with the giant robots that change?
Some of them are very obvious like that. Some of them not so much. They're currently putting out mockbusters that are, I guess they're, it's not, it's like Marvel and DC, but it's more like they did a Suicide Squad one where it was like, here's all the dark fairy tale characters come together to do a mission that none of the good fairy tale characters could do.
Oh,
and I wish
boy.
I could remember what it was called.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. I'm hoping that they do like a Blocks movie with all the Lego movies that come out. Like they get in bed with them.
And I think that's something we also we talked about. There's no less than four different connecting block toys out there other than Legos.
Right, so they should get in bed with one of those guys. And just make mockbusters of movies. I would watch it. I would watch them all.
I wish I... Oh, there's... My personal favorite is Creo.
Mm-hmm.
Creo is the Hasbro Lego knockoff.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't want to give the Transformers license to Lego. So they're like, oh, we'll just make our own Legos and we'll call them Creo.
Oh, my goodness.
And what's the company, the one who does the WWE ones? It's like called like C3 or something.
Right.
And then you got Mega Bloks, of course, and then you got Kinects.
Kinects.
Yes.
That would be fantastic.
But Kinects has like the Mario license and what's the other big license that they have? They had Angry Birds, they lost that. They have Plants vs. Zombies and Mario. They have, like, video game licenses.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. So that's how they're still staying afloat. Like
Creo, the Everything is Wonderful song from the Creo movie.
Everything's really good.
That's right.
Everything is good when you're all together.
And instead of having, like, you know, Pratt in the movies, they have, like, the Pratt knockoff. Whatever the Pratt knockoff would be.
R double.
Oh, no, he's a leg up on Pratt.
Oh, calm down, everybody.
That's right.
Pratt's like ahead of like two or three franchises at the very least. The Guardians of the Galaxy, Jurassic Park, and aren't they talking about him being the new Indiana Jones, speaking of which?
I don't think they should. I think they should have the guy who's going to play Han Solo in the Han Solo spinoff movie, because it just makes sense.
Who's playing the Han Solo character in the Blade Runner remake or sequel or whatever that comes out this year?
Harrison Ford.
Oh, he is?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
I think it's that young up-and-comer Harrison Ford. Fresh off a carpentry job.
I was building a deck for Kalista, but what do you want me to do? Yeah.
Hold on, let me put this drink down.
All right. We're off on a tangent. Let's get back on track. Comic book conventions this weekend. A couple here and there's. There's one called Mighty Con in Milwaukee. There's another one in Huntsville, Alabama, simply called Huntsville Comic Con. Roll Tide. But the biggie is the Dallas Comic Show in Dallas, Texas. That's the one that has lots and lots of comic book artists. Cully Hamner, Adam Hughes, Kevin Nolan. But on the celebrity side of things, they have Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Ho!
Helen Slater of The Legend of Billie Jean and nothing else. And John Wesley Shipp.
I hope he brings the helmet.
I would not be surprised if he doesn't have some sort of prop replica that the studio or the network or whatever gave him to travel with.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been on the convention circuit for a while. I'm just happy that he's like now like the top tier guest as opposed to the and also appearing guests.
Well, he has to be on the top. He's the Double Flash.
He's Double Flash?
He is Double Flash. It's like I was Barry Allen and Jay Garrick. If they could find a way to make me Wally too, it would just be like he's all the Flashes. Every one of them. God bless us, everyone, the Flashes.
No, he wasn't, right, he wasn't an evil Flash, that's right.
Well, he was the reverse Flash in an episode of The Flash.
Right.
But he was only pretending to be the reverse Flash, so.
Correct, correct. So he definitely played two out of the three main Flashes that we know and love.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have the links to these conventions, of course, in the show notes, along with a link to the soon-to-be-named network, which is what we're a part of. A cornerstone of a bunch of like-minded individuals, for the most part, who do podcasts of a variety of topics from what we do and other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Prodigal Sons Podcast, Prime Defective, Podvocacy, who are doing a special extra episode this week. I don't know what they're up to. Profane Argument, Puzzle Warriors 3, Talking Gimmicks, and Fresher in Parlance. All of these shows, and anytime any of us appear on any other shows, will be up at soontobenamednetwork.com or soontobenamednetwork.tumblr.com. So, moving off of that into digital sales and freebies, a bunch of sales going on. A lot of stuff left over from last week, still holding over while this episode is going live for the next day or so. Marvel is doubling down on Legacy, the Legion show that's on Fox or something, or FX, or I don't know where it is.
I'm going to have to watch another comic show?
No, you're not going to have to. Okay. They are doing a double sale on both single issues and trades. Marvel is also doing a sale on the first 200 issues of Avengers. I don't know if there's some sort of Avenger announcement coming out or something, but there you go. They're also doing a sale on collections of Daredevil. Now, Todd, I know you're going to be shocked when you see that there's more than the Mark Waid ones.
I know somebody came on and wrote some after him.
Right.
So maybe those are the ones you're talking about?
But it's like the first trades of any of these runs. It's like, oh, here's Daredevil Epic Collection, which is the stories from the 60s. Here's the first run by, the first issue of the run by Frank Miller. Here's the first, and again, I say first issue, the first trade of the run by all these different creators. Now, sadly, it does not appear as though the Carl Kessel, Kerry Nord stuff is collected in this.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly. But the first trade of the Mark Waid stuff is in there.
I think they should get Han Solo in there. That, because we all know he likes to do the Kessel run. See what I did there? That was just for you, Joe.
Thank you. They sadly skip over the Carl Kessel run into the Joe Kelly stuff, which is right before the Kevin Smith stuff, which is not part of the sale, but whatever. Dynamite is having a bunch of the old Vampirella books on sale. I mentioned those. And DC is having Justice League America stuff on sale, because I guess, is Justice League Suicide Squad done, or almost done, or close to being done?
It's over. All six issues are out.
Okay. So this is anything where the new characters that are going to be in this new Justice League are included, which includes anything and everything from the Lightning Saga from the late 2000s, the Justice League stuff that was done by Dwayne McDuffie, the Royal Flush Gang crossovers from recent years, some recent Rebirth stuff involving the Birds of Prey, a Vixen miniseries, the new 52 Black Canary run, plus some old Black Canary stuff, the Ray, the Atom, which includes Gail Simone and who was John Byrne, who were the co-writers on that, new Atom way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
The Cullen Bunn Lobo, and they also randomly throw in with that. And again, it's the entire run of Cullen Bunn's Lobo, plus the paramilitary Christmas special,
mm-hmm.
the zero issue, and the 1 million issue.
Wow. That's a hodgepodge of Lobo issues.
A bunch of Firestorm, Omega Men, all sorts of wacky stuff in this trade. I like when DC does these oddball sales, because
mm-hmm.
like you literally never know what you're going to get, one. And two, the selection process of what's chosen is confounding.
Here's all our like loose cannon and arsenal. Just right, start throwing those out.
Remember the issue of Young Heroes in Love where Electric Blue Superman showed up? Yeah, just that issue is going to be on sale.
We're going to give you that full run of Vexed so Giffen could be happy.
That's a lie, Todd. He'll never be happy.
Very true.
And then the digital freebies, which were not up last week at the time of the recording, but what we have available is Wolverine, Japan's Most Wanted, which was one of those Infinity comics that Marvel was doing where they released them digitally first because they were trying to do some tricks digitally with these books. They still do them, but they don't really publicize that they're doing them as much as they used to. Uncanny X-Men number 1 when Bendis took it over as like Cyclops was evil and all that jazz. Mm-hmm. Ultimate 6 where the Ultimates and Ultimate Spider-Man took on the Ultimate Universe Sinister 6, which was, I don't know, I remember that was at the time where they decided to print the Ultimate books on like the flimsiest paper stock in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm. It was like cellophane.
Yeah, it was real bad. And Winter Soldier number one by Ed Brubaker. So, you know, those are comic books that you can get for free. And if you can get free Ed Brubaker comics, that's always a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Jason Aaron wrote that Wolverine Japan's Most Wanted thing. So, hey, Jason Aaron, Brian Michael Bendis, Ed Brubaker, all have free comics available, and all that's in our show notes.
Yay!
Let's get into what we read from this past week, sir.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you to begin with whatever book you want.
I'm going to start with Batman number 16 by Tom King and Finch on art.
David Finch.
I'm sorry. My brain shut down for a second. But basically, this is the I Am Bane part one storyline. And it's basically after everything that's happened in the I Am Suicide storyline where he, you know, went down and took on Bane. This is them getting ready for Bane to retaliate. And Batman decides to get, for the most part, to get his Robins together and tell them, you know, something's coming. I want you to get out of town because Bane's going to take care of, you know, just take y'all out. And I'm worried about that. And I think that there's a couple other things in it that, like, one of Bane's henchmen shows up earlier in the book. But the main story takes place in a fast food restaurant, which actually absolutely blows me away, the fast food stuff, and the discussion between Robins. And just it shows just how different they are from, like, Tim to Jason to Dick to Duke, who's the new one, who's just trying to get a handle on all this as the rookie, like, trying to be like, well, we should do what Batman says. And the other Robins are like, that's adorable. We're not doing that. And we get some story about how Bruce is finally getting around to helping Gotham Girl with Psycho Pirate. Once again, like I said, Batman is maybe one of, if not my favorite book out of the Rebirth books right now. I can't say enough about it.
Yes, this was very good, and I like the... It's a new story arc, but it's still continuing off the previous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I still...
Okay.
I still can never and will never get used to Catwoman and her relationship with Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Catwoman is a bad person. Batman is a good person. I understand why he's enamored with her or whatever. But every time she shows up, she's always there to cause trouble and grief and, you know, throw a monkey wrench into whatever Batman's trying to do. And I understand completely that, you know, people have a blind spot for certain people or for certain reasons. This is Batman. He ain't supposed to have blind spots, brother.
But it works because that is his weak spot. His weak spots are Catwoman number one and Talia number two. It's that those are where he fumbles. He just wants the love of a good woman, Joe.
No.
But they're not good women.
Batman should not want anything other than the elimination of all crime from everywhere in the world.
He just wants justice, is what he wants.
Right.
No, I like it. I actually...
It's not I don't like it. It's one of those things that gets me mad.
See, I know what you're saying. Not that you don't like it, but I really like it because I like that this is his Achilles heel. I mean, granted, the Robins are his Achilles heels too. You could take them out and stuff like that. But that's where you can hurt him, but where he's going to make mistakes is when it comes to Catwoman. And I like that. It gives him a bit of vulnerability. He's not, I don't want perfect Batman, if that makes sense. I like the fact that he's got a tunnel vision area where he's gonna mess up big time because he's not thinking right.
That's not the way. I understand the storytelling device. I understand all that. I just don't like this Catwoman being around my Batman.
Oh.
I'm territorial, Todd.
You're just going to have a discussion at the shop with the big Catwoman fan that's there.
And listen, I got no problem with Catwoman herself. She could go and have her own little adventures and do whatever she does. And she wants to be a bad person and steal stuff, and that's fine. But the fact that Batman allows her to do things. It's like we were talking in the shop last week when we were talking about like the Clone Saga and all that Ben Reilly stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, when Ben Reilly takes over as the one true Spider-Man that lasted forever. And one, Venom didn't have the same sway over him because the symbiote didn't have the same bond with Ben Reilly like he did with Peter Parker. And Ben Reilly just, like, immediately takes Venom down with, like, ferocity. And is like, why did Peter allow this murderer just to run wild all this time? Mm-hmm. Why would he make a deal with him that it was okay for him to go and, like, eat people's brains and stuff?
Well, to be fair, they figured out that chocolate did the same thing, remember?
I do remember that plot point when they were, like, really trying to super babyface Venom.
Venom, brains melt in your mouth, not in your hands.
Oh my goodness. I have not read a Venom comic book in a million years. I wonder if that's still part of his, like, mythos.
Oh, Eddie Brock's coming back as Venom, so hopefully they'll bring back the chocolate bars. That would be fantastic. I would be, like, all over that.
That would get you to read a Venom book?
Yeah, the only Venom book I ever read was Sign of the Boss, and that's because I'm in it.
Glory Hound Todd.
Either I'm on the cover or I'm in. I'm not sure if I made the cover on that one or if I was inside. Doesn't matter. I'm famous.
So Batman's still good. It's just, I think that Catwoman's up to no good, Todd.
Oh, that dastardly Catwoman. The one true Catwoman.
Didn't they do that little two-parter where, like, they were having all those flashes of all the different Catwomen that have appeared throughout Yeah.
Where they were both remembering it differently.
Right.
Because of all the reboots and stuff. I thought that was kind of cool.
Right. We didn't talk about that, but this is the beginning of a new story arc, so, you know, that's how this comes up.
Right.
So the other book, new number one, of course, that we read from Marvel, which is Darth Maul number one, written by Cullen Bunn with art by Luke Ross.
Mm-hmm.
You all remember Darth Maul from The Phantom Menace?
That's right. He was the big breakout character.
He was the big breakout character.
After Jar Jar.
So, Darth Maul has rage inside of him. He's angry. Urgh.
He's a red Jedi.
And he needs to let this anger out. But Darth Sidious keeps saying, like, no, you can't. You have to keep this under wraps until I tell you the time is right. And then he ends up going on a mission to take care of something for Darth Sidious, who really could be anyone. I don't know who he is.
He's a mystery guy.
Right. And during all of this, he decides to keep one person alive, spoilers, so that he can go and have his own little adventure and get this aggression out, kind of outside of the purview of Darth Sidious.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, he keeps wanting to interact and fight with the other Jedi that are out there. And we get a little bit of a cameo from a young Obi-Wan in this to kind of give you a time frame of where this is. Like, was Qui-Gon in this? I don't quite remember.
I don't remember seeing him, but he could have been in the background somewhere, but I don't think he's out and out there.
Right, I think Qui-Gon showed up in this Yoda story that's going on over in Star Wars.
Okay.
So what did you think of this?
I thought it was okay. One, it looked great. I'm a big Luke Ross fan. Mm-hmm. I love his stuff. He's a chameleon. Like, I could show you this and then show you other Luke Ross stuff, and you'd be like, they're the same artist. Both great stuff, but that absolutely makes it beautiful. Does a beautiful Darth Maul. The action scenes, him looking menacing in the black robes and everything. But I don't have the attachment to Darth Maul the way I do to like the classic, like the original trilogy Star Wars characters, because he barely said a word in the original movies or the prequels, and then got taken out, you know, and we never, you know, saw him again until the cartoons and stuff, which I never watched. So I don't know. I don't have, like, there's no, other than Darth Maul, who's a smaller character in the prequels, there are no other characters from the prequels in this that I'm attached to either. So it's a fresh story, and in the end, it's a good story. I'm just not emotionally invested in it, if that makes any sense.
No, I'm with you. And that's what I was hoping for in this, because exactly what you mentioned, and I'm not the first one, you're not the first one, many other people have said this, in the prequel, Darth Maul had no character whatsoever. He was just a guy with a cool lightsaber and a cool look that showed up, said nothing, and got and had one fancy lightsaber battle and then was killed.
Which, to me, might be the best lightsaber battle in all of Star Wars, but, you know, that's just me.
So, based on that, he wasn't a one-note character, he was a no-note character in that film. And I was concerned that because of that, it was going to be tough to get into this book, but Cullen Bunn, I think, does a good job of kind of letting us see what's inside of him, more so than the prequel ever did.
Oh, way more than the prequel ever did.
If he did one word balloon the entire thing, it's like, wow, that's more in-depth than the other movie was, you know? Mm-hmm. But he's definitely trying, and I think at the end of this, we're going to get to see, like, maybe a little bit of pathos, maybe we're going to get to see how he chose the dark side. I'm intrigued to see where this is going to go, only because, you know, that is one of the few keen memories that I have from the prequels, is Darth Maul.
Right.
And because of the said lightsaber battle that you mentioned.
Right. No, it's true. He's probably the biggest wasted potential in, like, he's one of, anyway, in the history of movies. Literally when they put out the prequels, it looked like they had strapped that movie onto his back as one of the big villains. And then you were like, wait, what happened? Like, I expected him to at least be through a through line through the movies, and spoiler alert, he gets taken out in the first movie, and you're like,
he's the Captain Phasma of episode one.
Well, Phasma will be back.
Oh, you think so?
Oh, yeah. That was all set up. That was all set up.
I have a Captain Phasma collector's cup, so I hope she does become a big thing in the next movies, so that collector's cup will skyrocket in value.
I'm just hoping for my Jar Jar Binks prequel comic. When is that coming? When we find out... Go ahead.
I think it's going to come out at the same time as the Watto miniseries comes out.
Oh my god, I would kill for a Watto.
I actually know a guy who would kill for a Watto comic book.
He's the one.
Oh boy, he is the one. So I enjoyed it. You know, it's only a miniseries. I don't know if this is something that could sustain a full, like, lengthy series. But mm-hmm. 5 issues, I have faith in Cullen Bunn that he's going to add something to Darth Maul that was not there before.
Mm-hmm.
He already has done a little bit, and I'm expecting a lot more, and I have faith.
I'm glad.
Yes. So, that's what we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern Time or so, we put up the pull post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them in trade, whether you wait for some sort of fancy oversized hardcover, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out so that you're ready. Todd and I are doing two new things, well, one new thing, one ongoing thing, with our ongoing weekly pulls. One, of course, we're attempting to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week, but also we're keeping a running tally of how many books we've purchased throughout the course of the calendar year 2017. And we're even breaking it out by publisher, Marvel, Image, DC, Archie, Amigo, Dark Horse, and so on. Todd, somehow, has purchased more books than me so far this year. Not by much! But I'm shocked.
Why are you shocked?
I don't know.
I buy a lot of books.
I remember there were times last year where we were putting out the pull post, and I was getting like 13 books, and you were getting like 7.
Well, that was before new Rebirth stuff.
Touche. No, listen, man. There was a time where my DC pull side of my list was barren.
Mm-hmm.
It was a rough go. And these days, it's not a rough go. But I think come the spring, when a lot of these Marvel books either end or get rebooted or whatever it is, there's a bunch of miniseries and stuff I know that are ending sometime within the next, like, 2 months. So you're going to see a lot of stuff dwindling from there.
When books replace themselves, that's what we should call it.
So, Todd currently has the lead over me with 4 correct guesses and me with only 1 correct guess. Todd, you started the show.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking over your list and, let's see here. Is the book you're looking forward to most Detective Comics 950, the big anniversary issue?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
It is not. The book I am most looking forward to coming out this week is Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 14.
Okay.
Because it's the beginning of a new storyline.
Fair enough.
And I've been loving the book. The last issue we talked about here on the show 2 weeks ago was really, really good. Kind of explaining and doing the trope that I love so much where they set up all these future storylines. And now with this, I do a really good job these days of not reading the solicitation text of stuff. So I don't know what's coming up and I don't know which of these stories or if none of these are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very excited for the new story arc there.
Okay.
You, on the other hand, and I didn't do this on purpose, but now in hindsight, I'm going to say that I did. Is the book you're most looking forward to coming out this week Suicide Squad number 11?
No, it is not.
Ugh. All right, well, no movement, but that's okay.
Right. Why Suicide Squad number 11?
Because Justice League Suicide Squad is done.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking that maybe this would be the beginning of a new story arc there.
Okay, it is not. It is also Hal Jordan in the Green Lantern.
Oh, get out of town!
Right? But because you don't read solicitations,
uh-huh.
I won't. I know it's the beginning of a storyline, but I was stooged off.
Oh, come on! To now. Some,
that's coming on, coming up in that in this book, and I can't wait to see it in this book.
Well, it's both of our pick for the week, so we're going to both be talking about it here next week. I'm sure.
Right. Right. Something shows up. That's all I'm going to say. That's something. As far as I. Something. I'm trying to be very vague, so.
It's a Green Lantern book, so it's got to be a ring of some kind.
No, it's not, actually.
Oh, my goodness. Rumors and innuendo, Todd. You got to stay off these comic book dirt sheets.
Oh, my goodness.
They just make things up, and when they're wrong, they say, oh, they changed their mind.
Yep. You're going to be pleasantly surprised, I think, when you see what it is.
Todd, whenever I go pick up my comic books, I'm always pleasantly surprised.
That's because I'm there.
That's part of it.
Yes, you're like, oh, there's Todd. Joy and glee. Glee and joy.
So while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out past episodes of this show, past episodes of After Dark, if you're not a podcatcher, iTunes sort of person. And why really would you be when most browsers outside of Chrome, simply you could just bookmark RSS feeds and incessantly click F5 on them like I do, like any good podcast listener. Does
Chromium Comics have a
no
thing
stop
now?
It stop it okay. You can check out, of course, as well, past pull posts. You can check out things that we have read, reviewed or talked about or previously or whatever we've done on the site. It's all there. Also across the top of the page is our Amazon banner. When you purchase something through Amazon, we get a little bit of a kickback. There's still plenty of time to get your Valentine's Day purchases in and have them delivered in time if you are a Prime member. There's some sort of thing, Todd, you listen to thousands of podcasts, so I'm sure you've heard it mentioned on other podcasts. There's things that you could do where they're like bounties, where you, as one of these people who have the link on your site, you're like, hey, friends, go and buy this specific thing this week because Amazon's having a special on it and we get a little bit of an extra kickback on it. Or if you sign up for Prime or Amazon Music or, you know, whatever they are, right? We get like a little bit of an extra kickback. Like even if somebody literally signs up for Prime and then cancels the next minute, we get some sort of weird credit for it.
Okay.
That's a lot of work, Todd.
That is. I just wish that the sale was for Bounty towels. Then it could be a Bounty.
Oh, man.
That's what I want.
They have these dash button gimmicks. Are you aware of dash buttons?
No. I know what a button is.
Okay.
But not a dash button. A dash... Is that like the seasoning? Dash? No. Mrs. Dash?
But... A dash button is a thing that Amazon sells. And we're doing... I didn't want to do this, but we're doing it because I have to explain it. So... There, it's a little, it's you purchase this little, it's like maybe like 3 inches big, it has the logo of whatever, and a button on it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's everything from, as you mentioned, Bounty paper towels, to laundry detergent, to whatever it is. Like, it's a lot of usually like household items that you always need.
Mm-hmm.
Through Wi-Fi or some sort of other connective thing, you have the dash button, you're running out, you just click that button, and it automatically orders it for you and sends it to your house.
Nice. By drone, hopefully.
I think if you live in, like, the bigger cities, they send them by drones. Not us out here in the sticks.
Well, we should start a drone company. Longbox Heroes Drones.
Remember when they were worried about people capturing the drones?
Mm-hmm.
I got a basement full of drones that are just trying to get out.
I got my drone dungeon.
But some notable purchases through the Amazon link this week was someone purchased a Marvel Avengers reversible comforter, and then with the description it also says lifestyle stripe, and I don't know what that means.
It means it has a stripe for your lifestyle.
I guess. And someone also purchased Oreo Mokta green tea cookies.
That's not a real thing.
Why did I include them on here? Because they were very expensive Oreos. I was at the grocery store today. I saw how much Oreo cookies cost. These cost a lot more than those. So thank you for indulging your super expensive, super fancy cookie habit with us.
I wonder if it was the Martian Manhunter.
Oh, I saw a picture. I saw a drawing of a head sketch of him salaciously licking a Choco.
Oh, is that what they were called? I saw that. Well, they were called Oreos until DC was like, "Oh no, we can't have anything that looks or sounds like a product." So then they became Chocos.
Chocos, the name of the local bowling alley in my area.
Oh, they should sue.
They should sue.
So, hey,
bowling Chocos. Balls kind of look like those cookies.
That's right. I'm called Choco. Your cookies are called Chocos.
Let's talk about something before I have to break your legs.
Oh, my goodness.
Side note, we had my son's birthday party at Choco's last year.
Mm-hmm.
And every employee there, I think all of their combined ages was my single age. They let children work today, Todd.
If you're older than the size of the shoe than we have, you can't work here.
Well, I do wear pretty big shoes, so that covers a lot of ground, both figuratively and literally.
You buy your shoes at the clown store.
I do.
Mm-hmm.
And they fill up the entire shoe like an evil person, not like all good-hearted people who have small feet.
I'm the same way with clown pants. They're supposed to be baggy, but these are the most comfortable pants I've ever worn.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Twitter stuff. Follow the show on Twitter, Longbox Heroes. Follow me on Twitter at Joe Sposto. Follow Todd at Twitter, Roker the Joker. Did we have a Todd's Art Attack this week?
No, we did not.
And, of course, follow the network at it's STBN Network. On Twitter. It is connected up to the Tumblr/website, so every time a new episode of something goes up, it also sends out the notification through Twitter as well.
Mm-hmm.
Look at me being fancy.
You are a fancy pants.
Yes, fancy pants, but not a fancy gentleman. Just my pants are fancy.
Mm-hmm.
If you call threadbare and sweatpants fancy, then that's me.
I do, so we will.
So, let's get into Todd and Joe have issues for this week, which is Justice League number one. And Todd, I'm going to let you take point on this one, sir.
Mm-hmm. Swinging out of the events of the Legend miniseries / crossover, we get a new Justice League of characters who you normally, other than Martian Manhunter and Batman, you wouldn't think of as leaguers. Mr. Miracle, Oberon, who I always thought was a great get, Blue Beetle, Captain Marvel, Guy Gardner, Dr. Fate, Black Canary. Well, Black Canary was a Justice Leaguer. And this is them getting together for their first meeting, and all of a sudden they get an alert from one of the members, but all the members are at the headquarters, so they have to go off and take care of it at the United Nations. While all that's going on, we find out that the other person is Dr. Light, who never appears in costume in her four short appearances in this run. But the best parts about this are the group getting together, and we immediately find out how dysfunctional this group can be due to one small character by the name of Guy Gardner, the one true Green Lantern. Written by, or plots by Keith Giffen, and dialogue by J.M. Matisse, and art by, well, breakdowns by Giffen and finishes by McGuire. So this book has never looked better than it does in the first couple issues. I've always loved this issue, and I know I read it from the beginning. I can't believe it's 30 years ago. Oh my God, that absolutely blows my mind. And I'm going to say it before Joe can say it. I wear it like a badge of honor that I got Joe into this book. That's my biggest pride thing, that I know that you didn't read this before I gave it to you.
That is correct. And it was one of those things where I think you would convince me to pick it up. I picked up the first six issues, and from there, within about 3 months' time, I did everything I could to get the entire run.
I think I vaguely remember giving you the 80-page giant with the short story or something like that.
Maybe.
I could be wrong. I forget. I do remember we were playing Magic the Gathering at my house back in the day when we played a little bit together at Magic the Gathering, and I lent you a couple of issues. Didn't I do something like that, or is my brain foggy some many, many moons ago?
Possibly. Again, my brain is super foggy as well.
Ah, okay.
But this is definitely one of those ones, this and Preacher, like 1 and 1A of things that you got me to read.
Mm-hmm.
And they're home runs. They're great. So I just read this first issue for the first time in a long time. And this is one of those ones where I've read it so much, I remember almost all the beats as they were coming.
Mm-hmm.
And while there is humor in this, there is not as much humor as it would later become. Everyone gets a little bit, like, you get a little bit of everyone's personality, right?
Mm-hmm.
In this, but obviously the star of this book is Guy Gardner. Like, this is his book. Batman gets to do some stuff. Martian Manhunter gets to kind of close out the previous league, the Detroit Justice League. We get a little bit of everyone, and, you know, the dysfunctionality of it is really where it shines through. Now, we also get the mysterious man who's kind of pulling the strings of everything behind the scenes. Now, is this the first appearance of Maxwell Lord?
Yes, Maxwell Lord, I believe, is his first appearance as Justice League. I don't think he was in the Legends miniseries or anything like that.
Okay.
And I don't know if you noticed, and I have the art book to prove it, he was based on, at this time, Christopher Walken.
Oh, okay, from like the Dead Zone, maybe.
Yes, and then he goes to issue two to being Sam Neill from The Omen? Was he in The Omen? The Jurassic Park Sam Neill, that guy.
I know who you mean.
But I can't think of what horror movie was out around this time. Do you know what I mean? He was in, so. But
that's very interesting information that I did not know before this.
Yes, I can actually show you in the art book the two panels that they have next to each other to show you the differences from issue one to issue two. And if I don't know if you look in Justice League one though, there's a few panels where he looks exactly like Christopher Walken.
That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I never put that together.
And here's a little other thing that Guy Gardner obviously was based on, you know, had a look before he came into this. Kevin based the look on Guy Gardner of Franco from the Dirty Dozen.
Okay.
You could see like the haircut and everything. And that's who his like look to make him look like is based on. Do you remember the old movie, The Dirty Dozen?
I do.
Franco? That character. Yeah. I can't think of the actor's name because, you know, I only know Telly Savalas from that movie. And, Jim Brown, those are the only two that I remember. But, yeah, he's based on Franco. See, look at me bringing... It's almost like I know something about this.
Right, now, because, again, this is your book. You know, this is, like, your run. This is your title. If anyone's going to know anything about this outside of the creators, it's going to be you.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I could mediate, like, a panel on this and tell them stuff that they didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
But go ahead, sorry.
So the other thing that I wanted to mention with this was the pop culture references that are strewn about in this.
Rambo with a ring? Stuff like that?
Where Guy Gardner's like, or was it Black Canary's like, oh, you're like a regular Sylvester Stallone. And Guy Gardner's like, oh, he emulates me. What are you talking about? I'm just like, oh, I love that sort of stuff.
Don't you know Alan Alda's out?
That's what it was.
And Sylvester, that's why I love, because Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis, I love them. But when they do books now, like when they were doing, I'm trying to remember what some like Threshold and stuff like that, and they still are using those references. Like within the last 8 years, J.M. and Keith wrote a book and they dropped in a My Three Sons reference. And I'm like, who is this for? I'm like, I barely remember My Three Sons from Nick at Night when I was younger.
They're writing for themselves, and I don't blame them.
I don't blame them either. So I would like to read this more of these issues again and see how many My Three Sons references they do drop. So
I know there's a lot of visual stuff to I know there was like to the opening and the looks of just characters. And stuff like that. But yeah, there's a lot of My Three Sons in there. I'm sure there's a site out there that probably lists all of the references.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I kind of like the fact that there's a Connie Chung in here. And a Dan, like a, not a Dan, I can't think of who the NBC anchor was. Like they
Ted
made them
Koppel.
Look like Ted Koppel and stuff like that. They look like them in the news things. But you know, I do have to talk about the art because I don't know if you know this. I'm a fan of the artist who drew this.
You are?
Yes, shockingly enough. And there's some great sight gags, too, in it with, like, when Oberon, like, just tackles Guy from behind and starts, like, punching him in the face. Like, it's just so fantastic. And the characters are almost believable in – they're superheroes, but it's like – like Beetle talking about how his talents are wasted just pretending to be people over the intercom. But Batman's just like, just everybody shut up and stop questioning me. Just do your job. Batman is fantastic in this as the ultimate straight man. There is no better like straight man version of Batman than there is than the Justice League run. And as it goes on, like you said, the comedy comes out. It's not until Moving Day where it hits. Mm-hmm. And then he's the straight man. But all that stuff is set up here. And also the whole tension between Guy and Batman, that I can only imagine how that's going to play out in one of the biggest fights in history.
Oh, I'm sure one day Guy Gardner's just going to blow his top and finally be fed up with whatever Batman's giving him. And it's going to be a knockdown, drag out battle.
That's right. If it's 24 pages of a comic, then it'll be the prologue. Him going off, the whole fight, and then the epilogue.
And this is another thing. This was like 32 actual like story pages, you know. So this is a lot to read for a first issue, you know.
And you never felt bogged down, even now.
No.
And you know who I want to give credit to, and a lot of people don't give credit to him. And JM will be the first one to drop his name, is Andy Helfer. Without Andy Helfer as the editor on this book, editors, you know, don't get enough. But you look at, and this is going to be me, as, you know, I'm team this group all the way.
Mr. JLI.
Just Mr. JLI. I have it tattooed on my arm. When Andy Helfer leaves and they come back and do projects together and they're just like, Keith, JM, you know, Kevin, do your thing. It's so many word balloons, so many word balloons where they've admitted in articles where Andy'd be like, nope, take that out. Nope, take this out. Nope, take that out. Sometimes less is more. And you could see it that there's not a ton of jokes, even when the book gets jokey later on down the line. But you read like Super Buddies and like you can almost not see the art through the word balloons. That's because Andy Helfer isn't there to trim the fat where it's needed.
Right.
And you gotta give him credit. You gotta give him credit for just letting him do this team. I mean, oh my God. This team is fantastic. Look at it.
And it grows and it changes, but they always keep like so people come and people go. Like Martian Manhunter's there for the entire run, right?
Yes. Of the Keith and
right. And that's what we're talking about, the Keith and JM run.
Mm-hmm.
And Booster and Beetle are there for the entire run, yes?
No. Booster doesn't show up until
issue... Booster doesn't show up until, like, issue 3 or 4.
Right, he shows up at the end of 4, I think, and then he's on board because the mysterious Maxwell Lord just shows up and brings him on. He's like, he's on your team, like he did Dr. Light, you know? He's just like, you're on the team, I'm going to run this thing. So, go ahead, sorry.
No, but there's, like, people who kind of leave... very, you know, shortly hereafter, or they're only here for whatever reasons. But, you know, you could kind of extrapolate on this a little bit more. As I mentioned in the post that went up, is they were tasked with doing a new Justice League book. But it's like, you can't have Wonder Woman, you can't have Superman, you can't have The Flash, and if you want a Green Lantern, this is the one you could use. Go ahead and make a Justice League book.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. You know, and they defied the odds, and they made one of the most iconic runs of any comic book ever.
Do you want to know something interesting about this team?
I do. Look at this. This is what I want to learn more about this.
This iconic team on the front cover of this book, all those members. By issue 7, do you know who's left?
By issue 7?
Yes, who's left on the off that cover?
Martian Manhunter.
Yep.
Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Guy Gardner.
Mm-hmm.
Blue Beetle.
Right. And that's Mr. It. Miracle. And Mr. Miracle.
And Oberon, that I guess, as well.
Right. I count him as more of a... Right. By Black Canary leaves because Green Arrow becomes the suggested for mature readers book at the time.
Right.
And she was assaulted and lost her canary cry, so they couldn't use her. Captain Marvel goes off because... they were mad. They were also mad at Justice League because they were using the golly gee whiz. He was still Billy when he was in the Captain Marvel thing. Dr. Fate just leaves, but then JM ends up writing the Dr. Fate ongoing,
mm-hmm.
which is really good. Dr. Light doesn't last 4 issues. She leaves when Booster comes on. And like I said, she never even suits up. The only time you ever see... her kind of is on the cover with just the headband. You don't even see the suit. So, and then characters would come and go because this book contradicted how they acted in their own book. And the other writers hated it. But this book was one of DC's biggest sellers at the time.
Right.
So they're like, what can we do? And the rotation, like the Hawkman and Hawkwoman shows up. And they leave because they turn out to not even be the Hawkmen that we thought they were. They were imposters from Thangar because nothing ever lined up in all the history and stuff like that. So it was funny. It was But it almost worked because the book was the team was the laughing stock of superheroes. So people would show up and go, I can't do this. I have to leave. So they would, it would make sense after a while, if you know what I mean.
Right. They would occasionally through the runs do like recruitment drive issues
mm-hmm.
where people would just like show up and say, no, thank you.
Right. Issue 24 is one of the big ones where they have the party.
Yeah.
And they have recruitment drives and it's fantastic. We could do Todd and Leonard. Oh my God. Todd and Joe have issues. I could pick 20 issues from this run and do. I could pick Moving Day. I could pick the three aliens go out on a dinner date. Just a ton of them. I could do Justice League Antarctica. I could do all of it. Justice League is an iconic book, and it still holds up to this day. Jokes from this book, if they weren't wiped out of existence by the three continuity changes over the years, they still – the whole One Punch thing is – probably one of the most legendary fights in the history of comics, and nothing happens in it. Nothing happens in it. There's one punch. That's why it's called the One Punch Fight, Joe, in case you were wondering.
I knew this. But
sorry, I went off there. I was having a Justice League moment.
You know, but you talk about, of course, how they were upset with the way that they were being certain characters were being used in this book, but then you have your characters like, you know, Martian Manhunter, like Booster and Beetle, like Guy Gardner, where pieces of their character that were never this way before this book are still ringing true today, 30 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not like that. They did not act this way. They did not have that interplay until this book.
Though I will admit, Guy was this way before he came on this book, when he was in Green Lantern Corps at the time. I mean, they took it to the nth degree, but he was this big of a jerk over in his own, like over in the Green Lantern book.
Sure,
Everybody else, like they made, like Booster was nothing like the, like when you saw Booster in his ongoing thing, like he was completely different than how he ended up being, and he was portrayed. And they had to fix, Geoff Johns kind of fixed that later, that he wasn't the complete and total loser. Oh, I just thought about Club JLI too. Oh, that's another story we could do. But yeah, they're all. Iconic from this book. The way they're remembered and will always be remembered, most of the characters that were in this are from this run and not any other run.
Right. And that's what makes it so good.
Mm-hmm. Now I want to read more.
So we've extrapolated as much as we can for now. Again, you know, as Todd mentioned, we could probably talk about this run all day.
Can I mention one last thing before
we move on? Go ahead.
I really had a tough choice in figuring out how to read issue one of this run.
I saw the picture you tweeted the other day, yes.
I just went with the regular individual issue, one of them that I own, just in case anybody was wondering.
I went with the hardcover version that I have upstairs just because I had it readily accessible. I didn't need to dig anything out of a box. It's right on my bookshelf. I could grab it and go.
I was going to go with the chromium, but that seemed too fancy for the occasion.
Right, right.
And then the hardcover gift one that has all their autographs in it was just – I have to put the white gloves on to read, and I wasn't doing that. So what's our issue for next week? It's your turn to pick.
So we talked about an iconic run in a team book that's celebrating its 30th anniversary this week. Or this month. Next week's Todd and Joe Have Issues is going to be a much ballyhooed, much celebrated team book that's celebrating its 20th anniversary this month. And that is the Marvel book from Kurt Busiek and Mark Bagley, Thunderbolts number 1.
Everybody who hasn't read that book, raise their hand.
Todd, you have your hand up, huh?
Yes, I do. I've never read any of the original Kurt Busiek Thunderbolts.
This was one where, you know, it was my turn to pick. I'm looking at the list. Now, this was not on the list.
Mm-hmm.
And technically, and this is, like, this kind of wraps up, you know, it's a one-and-done story, which is kind of what we're doing here. But there are a couple dangling plot threads that don't get picked up until the next issue. But nothing major. It's not like these are huge things. It's like, oh, this is where the story is going.
Right.
That's kind of what Thunderbolts number one is.
A lot of comics are like that, though. So right. There's always going to be something that's to hook you for the next issue.
Right, because it's just because with Thunderbolts, the first two issues is technically the complete story.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really, because you get a full story in issue one, and the only reason that issue two is part of that first run, the first story arc is because the reveal at the end of number one is such a big deal, you need to see the fallout that happens in the next issue.
Right.
And everybody by this point knows what the fallout is from that issue, what the big reveal is. We're not going to talk about it now, we're going to talk about it next week. When we talk about that issue.
Find out. I can't wait to read it and find out.
It's been a secret for 20 years, Todd.
Mm-hmm. It was in Al Capone's vault, so right. I didn't get to read it.
Roadmaps. Oh, no, that was his glove compartment. So, that wraps up the comic book portion of Longbox Heroes. We are going to get into discussion of Flash and Legends of Tomorrow. So if you've not seen them, do not care, or otherwise, we bid you adieu. We will see you next week. Thank you very much for listening to episode 332. And we'll give you like a second or two here while we dive into those new TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, let's start with The Flash.
Yes.
Gypsy shows up from... Right. Earth 19.
And this Harrison Wells Earth, right?
Right, Harrison Wells Earth, because on their world, it is a crime to go and stay on another Earth.
To either come or go, to open a breach, right. Apparently.
So she's here to bring him back, dead or alive, unless someone sticks up and defends him. Since she has similar breach powers like Cisco has, he decides he's going to stand up and fight her for his honor, but also he's got the hots for her as well.
Well, he has the hots for a lot of female characters on the show.
Right. And then we also have our B and C plots going on, most notably Iris. So Barry is trying to fix things so that Iris does not die. And mm-hmm. he comes to the realization that, you know, how he thinks he's going to be able to fix it. And it involves Wally. But Iris, on the other hand, is also attempting to use Wally because in her mind, she knows she has a definitive date where she's going to die. Allegedly. So she is carrying herself around like Mr. Burns when he had all of those diseases at the same time. She thinks she's invincible.
Mm-hmm.
Because as long as it doesn't happen on that day in May, which also happens to be around the same time that the season finale is coming around, sheer coincidence, I'm just saying, Todd.
Sometimes it happens that way.
Right. She can kind of get a little free with what she's doing, kind of take a little bit more risks, even though Barry and Joe and everybody else doesn't want her to, because they still think she could die at any time, but she's like, no, you're telling me I'm going to die in 3 months, so, you know... Let me do what I can, and, you know, you guys will figure it out, and I won't die. Which seems to be facetious logic, but listen, it's a TV show, we'll go with it. What did you think of this episode?
Well, we'll start with that plot line. I had a big problem with that plot line, because her thing is, well, I have a date that I'm going to die, so I could do whatever I want. I'm just going to walk through this gunfight if I feel like it. And I'm kind of like, well, isn't the whole point they're trying to change history, so... If it can be changed, you could die. So you might want to dial it back on the danger thing, if you know what I'm trying to say.
Yes, absolutely.
I just that annoyed me. I always find it annoying. There's two tropes that I hate. I hate the reporter who can't let go of a story, and the cop who, when the case is so personal, someone tells him to leave it alone, but he can't. He only makes things worse. I cannot stand those tropes at all. But otherwise, I did kind of like the vibe Gypsy fight, though I am a stickler for maybe the characters should be more like their comic versions. And I think we've seen enough versions of vibe if you know what I mean, like with that power.
Right, right.
But then how do you have her come from the earth that she's on? I guess. I don't know. I liked it. I thought maybe I liked the fact that Sisko stood up for him, and a lot of people had a problem with it that I heard of, where they're like, oh, well, he's standing up for her and he's the least experienced, so he shouldn't have done it. But then you find out that she has the ability to just totally shut down Speedster's powers. So in the end, he really was the only choice. So I don't know. I liked it with a couple of flaws. That's the best way to put it. I don't think it was the best episode. I don't think it was the worst episode. But I do think her not bringing him back might come back to bite them in the end somehow. But that's just me.
I like this episode a lot. But mm-hmm. I'm a sucker for this show. I like that it was a Sisko-centric episode. I think the guy who plays Sisko is a really good actor. I think he's fun. He's mm-hmm. one of the few people that seems to be having fun both in character as Sisko with his powers, except for the episodes where he's mopey because Barry might have killed his brother or caused his brother to die. But it also seems as though the actor is having the most fun with the material.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the actor who plays Wally is, I don't want to say a stiff, but he's a little stiff. You know, Barry, of course, is the lead of the show, so he can't be too ha-ha. Caitlin, of course, is in constant fear that she's going to become Killer Frost. So when Sisko gets a little bit of a spotlight, it's much more enjoyable for me.
I do like Sisko as a character. I think he's very relatable.
Right, so I really like this episode. I like the stuff with Gypsy, and again, the fact that she's a breach person instead of a person who creates force fields, whatever. I'm sure they will come upon Gypsy of their Earth who does the force fields thing, and, you know, that's their way to get that back in and around, you know?
And then they could do Justice League Detroit.
Right.
Because they're getting closer.
Has Sisko break danced on the show yet?
No, he hasn't. I really want that vest to pop out is what I want. And because he's got the glasses. That was one of the sweetest costumes in comic book history.
It was something.
I loved it. Olympic level breakdancer.
Was he a member of the Circuit Breakers? I don't remember what his breakdancing clique was called.
I don't know, but I thought it was, I know his move was like the zero G and he had the seven leaf clover.
I think we're mixing our metaphors at this point.
Yeah, I think we are.
So I enjoyed Flash much more than you, which seems to be the way, which is fine. You know, I'm a sucker for these sort of things.
But Flash is one of my favorite runs, and I'm a stickler to keeping it like it is. I don't like Transformers Savitar. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that I have to get used to things, and this season seems to be the one that's the furthest out. Though the one last thing that I will say that I did like about is I like the friction Dr. Alchemy brings to the group now that he's part of Team Star Labs.
Oh, yes. Draco Malfoy. Yes, yes.
Yes. So, but I'll come back around. I'm sure of it.
All right. So let's get into Legends of Tomorrow, Legion of Doom. The A story is centered around Damian Daharic. Is that how you pronounce that?
It's Dark.
Oh, Damian Dark. Okay. And he and, oh, who's the other? Malcolm Merlyn.
Right.
Trying to get the secrets out of the guy who used to be Rip Hunter. And all the while, they are being played like pawns by Eobard Thawne. And he keeps running away to do something. And the rest of the legends are on what's their spaceship called again?
The Wave Rider.
They're trying to figure out how come they can't find anything on Eobard Thawne. Also, Eugene Grimby of the Wool Council goes and gets his daughter, who is a time anomaly, to help them figure some stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of broad strokes on this one. So what'd you think of this episode?
I loved it because it featured mostly, it featured heavily on the Legion of Doom, which their interactions are absolutely the best. I love good villains are what you need for like a superhero story, and them together. And then when, Malcolm Merlyn and, Dark finally put things together. Their adventure to go get what the MacGuffin out of the vault is fantastic, and it all falls apart. And the way they treat Rip Hunter, you know, mind altered Rip Hunter, is fantastic. But when they confront Eobard in the vault is one of my favorite things. It's like, we are done. We are done being lackeys or stooges or whatever. We are equals as of now. Wink, because that's going to hold true. At no point is anybody going to try to get the upper hand here. So, and then the whole plan, you find out what Eobard is running from. It's Hunter Zolomon from season 2 of The Flash, the Black Flash,
right?
Apparently. And they're like, have you tried not running? Like, let's put, you know, more cats in the wall, if you know what I mean? You think it would be an idea that wouldn't work, but it actually does. And I actually thought that was an intense scene where the Black Flash shows up. And you don't, and I think what makes the scene all that better is you don't see Eobard terrified that much. And he looked terrified, which you were like, oh, this is a bad, bad cat right here.
Right, and some of the CGI on the Black Zombie Flash was suspect.
What? Listen, everything is a high bar after Giant Atom.
That's true.
This is the Lord of the Rings right here compared to Giant Atom.
I liked the episode. I liked how the two plots kind of intertwined with each other, mm-hmm. of how the Legends were figuring out why they couldn't find anything on Eobard, while Damian Dark and Malcolm Merlyn were trying to figure out why he keeps running off. I liked how that all happened. I liked the caper and heist stuff, as you mentioned. And I really like these two characters together as a team, I guess. Would be the best way to say it.
Damian and Merlyn?
Yes.
Which is funny, because you don't watch Arrow, is that they hate each other from Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
But because this is Malcolm, or not Malcolm Merlyn, Damian Dark from the 70s or whatever, he hasn't met Malcolm yet, but Malcolm hates him for things. So it's really interesting knowing, like, where they are in time, how all this works. You know what I mean? It's a little extra for me because I watch Arrow.
So here are the two things that I have. And obviously, I don't watch Arrow. You do. I now just learned in the TV universe, Ra's al Ghul is not a single person. It's a title that you get, apparently.
Right, but it still works the same. He had the pit, and he lived a long life, and he was looking for a replacement. But they're saying he replaced somebody years and years ago, and Damian Dark was looking to be the next Ra's.
Gotcha. So the other concern that I have with this, again, this character of Damian Dark is new to me. So I did some looking, and I knew he looked familiar.
Oh, I think I know who you're going to say he is.
I knew him from somewhere and something.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and I looked up his IMDb. He's an actor by the name of Neil McDonough.
Mm-hmm.
He did a lot of voice acting stuff in the 90s. Bit parts, nothing really huge.
He was in Walking Tall.
Okay. What, the original from, like...
No, the one with the real... With Black Adam.
Hang on. We'll get mm-hmm. there.
Okay.
So, he does all these things. He's in Minority Report. He's in Flags of Our Fathers. Again, Todd mentioned Walking Tall. So now we start to get into some of his more well-known stuff. He plays M. Bison in the Street Fighter Legend of Chun-Li movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever seen that, Todd. It's terrible.
No, I didn't.
In a bit of irony, remember when DC was doing the direct-to-DVD videos and they would put like 2 or 3 or 4 on the same case, like in the same DVD?
Right.
And they did a Green Arrow short. He did the voice of Green Arrow in that.
Oh, wow. So he was... the villain, and he was Green Arrow, the hero.
Right, right. He was also Dum-Dum Dugan in the Marvel Universe.
That's the one I remember. I actually was watching the first Avenger the other night, and I was like, oh, Damian Dark is Dum-Dum Dugan.
Right. He was also the villain in the Marine 3, the one that starred The Miz.
Well.
Not the low point of his career yet. We're going to get there.
What?
He still does he still does voiceover stuff, like in video games. Like, he still does the voice of Dum-Dum Dugan in the Marvel movie-based video games and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He was a character on the TV show Suits that I've never heard of.
Right.
But in addition to being the villain in the Marine 3 starring The Miz, he is also the villain, Todd, in Paul Blart Mall Cop 2.
Oh, the sequel everyone demanded.
a scam write-off to the Wynn Resorts in Las Vegas. He's the villain in that film.
I bet you... Hey, you know what? He's probably... As Michael Caine said, I've never seen the movie when it comes to Jaws 4, but I did see the house it bought.
There you go.
Did you ever hear that story?
Yes. Oh, Michael Caine... I guess that's from his book, isn't it?
Right.
Yes. And I guess he did the book on tape version of it. So it's Michael Caine in the Michael Caine voice talking about how there was a period of time in the 80s where he simply chose his scripts of filming? You're filming on a beautiful exotic island? I'm there. I don't even need to see the script. Just send me there. What? It's the greatest script of all time, but you're filming in the Antarctic? I'll pass.
That's right. 20 guaranteed Oscars?
Right.
Nope. I'll do Jaws 4.
A paid vacation for 3 weeks for me and my family? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's the way we should be doing this show.
Oh. When we do the live shows, whoever pays us the most to go to the nicest place.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
I say just buy me a sandwich. I'm a cheap date.
You know what? Yes. Or a nice stromboli. That would be.
Oh, man. So, I think that covers everything for the TV shows.
Yep. Other than next week, may we have Batman Lego talk?
Oh, that's right. Batman Lego comes out this weekend. Both Todd and I are going to see it separately from each other. We will talk about it on the show next week.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's in an early running to be the best Batman movie ever made.
Now, again, outside of, like, just lame propaganda for the thing,
mm-hmm.
of, like, I've seen what the toys look like just because their displays are everywhere. I don't know what this movie is about.
I don't either. I've seen a couple of gags
that don't
tell you what the plot is. It's just like he's in the Batplane or the Batmobile. I don't remember which one it is. And it's just packed full of people. And they're just like, how come you only have one seat in here? And he's like, because last time I counted, I only have one butt. And I'm like, I'm going to see this movie. That's it. That's all I need. That's all I need. And recently CW put out a commercial with the voice actors from the show doing their versions of the Lego figures that has nothing to do with the movie. It's just a CW commercial. And I'm like, this is fantastic. So
I'm very excited to see it.
Yes.
Yep.
But I think that's everything now.
That is everything now. Thank you. So, for Todd, this is Joe, officially closing out episode 332 of Long Box Heroes, and we will catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boop!